You're listening to Vatican Radio. I'm Philippa Hitchin. On Monday, February the 8th, the Church marks the second International Day of Prayer and Awareness Against Human Trafficking, an initiative promoted particularly by women religious committed to the struggle against this modern form of slavery. 2 years ago, an alliance of religious congregations, bishops and international police chiefs met with Pope Francis in the Vatican and set up a network known as the Santa Marta Group to better coordinate their work of prevention, protection of victims and prosecution of the trafficking gangs. Kevin Hyland is the UK's first independent anti-slavery commissioner and former head of the London Metropolitan Police Service's Human Trafficking Unit. He was responsible for the convictions of numerous international crime groups and now works closely with the Santa Marta Network. Hyland was in Rome this week to talk about the UK's experience, including a new Modern Slavery Act and his own strategic plan, stressing the potential for working in partnership, putting the needs of the victims centre stage. I talked to him about his work. Kevin Hyland, you're over here in Rome, in the Vatican, on this day that the Church marks, a day of prayer and awareness against human trafficking. Tell us a little bit about your mission here.
Yes, well, today was about sharing the UK's experience, the new legislation in particular that's been introduced into the United Kingdom, the Modern Slavery Act 2015, how that has been implemented, my strategic plan, which looks wider than the actual act, looks at how we can work in partnerships, working internationally, putting the victims at the centre of everything we do, but very much looking at prevention.
Now, as you said, the UK introduced a new legislation, the Modern Slavery Act, a year ago. How much success has that had, both in securing prosecutions of the traffickers, but also in protecting the victims of trafficking?
Well, the Act got royal assent in March of last year and became effective in the 1st of August of last year. And certain parts of it have been rolled out even to this year and are still to come into effect later in April, for example, supply chain transparency. But what has already happened in that short period of time is we've seen a marked increase in the number of victims who have been identified for referral into the National Referral Mechanism. In 2014, the number was 2,340. Last year, the number exceeded 3,200. So a significant increase, which was something I wanted to see. But also, prosecutions have increased. In the entire period of 2014, trafficking offences were used on 176 occasions through the courts. In the first 6 months of last year, 233 occasions, and we're seeing prosecutions up. 96 prosecutions in the first 6 months of last year, as opposed to 130 in the entirety of 2040.
These are encouraging figures. Do you think that this legislation will therefore start acting as a deterrent to the traffickers?
I think the legislation will. I think it goes wider than a deterrent because, yes, deterrent is about actually mounting prosecutions. You know, we've got prevention orders and risk orders that can be used to stop people committing crimes. But I think the supply chain transparency element is actually going to change cultures. It's going to change the way business does business, the way that they transact with their staff. We are actually demanding that they actually look after their staff, no matter where their staff are in the world. And that's a cultural change. Now, there have been people who have said that there aren't punitive measures attached to the supply chain transparency. Well, there are if a company is so reckless that they can be shown to have committed an offence that they ought to have known, which the actual act says. But actually, the supply chain transparency element is about companies looking for slavery in their supply chains and then putting it right. It's very different to, say, Bribery Act, or very much different to money laundering, where we want companies to keep away from that because that's a positive step to do something wrong. Whereas if there is exploitation in their supply chain, we want them to find it. But when they find it, put it right, because then that means we are raising the standards of people across the globe.
It's also something that's quite difficult to enforce, isn't it? Because companies subcontract so far away from their bases that it's quite difficult sometimes to follow these supply chains.
It is incredibly difficult to follow supply chains, but companies will have to do it. When we are talking about human lives at risk, when we are talking about the enslavement of our fellow citizens, nothing is too difficult to achieve. And if we take, for example, the fishing industry, now that has been tainted quite badly with elements of slavery within it as an industry. However, I was at a conference last week held in Malta where the fishing industry comes together and their oversight body, Seafish, has started to introduce a responsible fishing program whereby the vessels will be in effect kite marked, showing that their standards are sufficient to make sure that people who work on board those vessels are being looked after and paid properly and being treated with dignity. Now, the larger companies are saying that they will only start to trade with vessels that have that trademark or that kite mark. So actually, we can change over a period of time the way that an entire industry operates. So these are small steps, but actually they're small steps at the moment, but they will become big steps. And that will change the way business is done across the world. And then we will see people treated with dignity. And that's when we'll get the cultural change.
You're spearheading very much these efforts, aren't you, within the police in the UK. The Santa Marta Group brought together, I think it was 24 police representatives from different countries around the world, again, signing this declaration of commitment to raise standards, to change the culture. How much do you see other countries falling in line, if you like, or living up to these commitments that they've made?
Well, the idea of the Santa Marta Group was somewhat unusual, bringing together police chiefs and leads of civil society and bishops and religious congregations, all being spoken to and addressed by Pope Francis. Well, of course, that was a unique moment, but the Pope was very clear in what he expected. And the police chiefs took that on. The members of civil society took that on and the bishops took that on. And so what we're seeing now is countries like Lithuania who have got representation between police and church in every single region. And they now want to push that forward to be more operational. In Poland, there are relationships between the church and the law enforcement where victims are looked after and the police will follow up the prosecutions. We are seeing changes in other countries. So, for example, at Nigeria, we're doing an enormous project in Nigeria with the British government, with the church on the ground in Edo State, working with women religious, working with the National Agency for Fighting Trafficking in that region, how we can deal with prevention, how we can deal with law enforcement, how we can deal with community awareness, but also how we can introduce sustainable development opportunities through agribusiness. So there are so many things that have come out of that. There are just a number of the issues. There are more happening across the globe, for example, in Argentina, for example, in the United States, and for example, in the Philippines. So these programs that have come out of the Santa Marta Group need to be nurtured, need to be grown, and they can actually make the change in those regions to make sure that victims have the support they need, but then the perpetrators are brought to justice.
You're talking about the victims, and we read the statistics which seem to continue to grow of the number of people around the world who do fall victim to the traffickers. Can you tell us perhaps a story or perhaps one or two cases or one or two people you've met who are examples of where the tide is beginning to turn on this?
Well, if we look at the figures across the world, you know, the British government estimate there's between 10 and 13,000 people suffering in modern slavery in the United Kingdom. The global number is estimated to be anywhere between 26 million and 31 million. Now, they are enormous numbers across the world. But if you look at the human suffering behind that, I could tell you about a seven-year-old child who was trafficked from Romania to the United Kingdom and kept in a normal house in North London. For 3 years, she was kept by that group, that organised crime group, who also in their garden used to keep men in a shed who they would send out to commit petty crime. But she would work from 5 a.m. in the morning till 11 or 12 o'clock at night. The only possession she had were the clothes that she wore. She was in poor health. Her teeth were rotting. She couldn't count to 10. Now, through police working together with statutory agencies and with charities, both of those people are now living very normal lives. The man, George, is well on the road to recovery. The little girl is doing extremely well at school and is now meeting her expectations for her age. And the criminal gang are now in prison, serving very long terms of imprisonment. That is the real suffering. But also we see it where it can go wrong. A 14-year-old girl was trafficked into the United Kingdom from Nigeria. She was taken to a flat in East London where she was raped daily. She was sold for sex and raped. When she was no more use to that organised crime group, they were trafficking her to France where they were going to sell her on. She was arrested in the UK, leaving the UK, by French authorities because she had documentation that clearly weren't hers. She was handed over to the British authorities and she went through immigration, police, she went through the courts, she was examined by medical professionals, and she went into the prison service having pleaded guilty to possession of documents, the documents for a 27-year-old adult. It was so obvious she was not 27. She went to prison as a 27-year-old when she was a 14-year-old child who had been subject of rape. Now, a charity got involved who referred that to law enforcement, who did an operation on that, actually listened to her, managed to work with her very carefully, arrested those responsible for trafficking her. She is now doing very well. She is now studying. She wants to become a lawyer because of her experience through the judicial system in the United Kingdom. And she has spoken about her experience. Now, there are cases of success, and you see the strength in some people who can come forward, even having gone through all those horrors of being a victim of trafficking by the slave masters and the traffickers, and then in effect a victim of the state when she was wrongly imprisoned. And she was still strong enough to stand up and get those who had exploited her convicted. So I think it's about everybody coming together. Not every victim is going to be able to speak about what's happened to them, but I think it's very much for the organisations who are working in this to come together and to be collaborative in order that the victims are identified, are supported, and those who are committing these offences are punished. But also we need to work in countries of origin to stop this happening in the first place by the projects similar to what we're doing in Nigeria, and obviously projects that are happening elsewhere in the world, many of which have been developed by the Santa Marta Group.
These are very powerful stories, very powerful witnesses, as you say, to the strength of the human spirit of these survivors of the traffickers. This day is about awareness, about raising awareness. What else do you think can ordinary people do to become involved in this struggle?
Well, firstly, people should be aware of it, understand it happens in communities across the United Kingdom, across the world, and start to understand what does it look like. For example, if you live in a rural area of East Anglia, what does it look like in your streets? What does it look like in the fields? Now, one person in one field may look exactly the same as someone on the opposite side of the road. But when you look more carefully, what does that person look like physically? Do they look tired? Are they wearing health and safety equipment? What sort of vehicles pick them up? Where do they live? Are they living many people in one house? Are they abusing on alcohol on the streets because they've got nothing else to do and because they're not getting money? There are a number of indicators. For example, the seven-year-old I spoke of. People did see that there was a seven-year-old there who wasn't going to school, but thought, is that the way foreigners live? So it's actually changing your approach. Also, if you see issues like, for example, people who are going to work in building sites, people who are going to work in factories, who aren't working in a way that you would think is reasonable, then you need to contact the authorities. And there is a helpline in the United Kingdom. The number is 0800 012 1700, and people shouldn't be afraid to ring that, because it could be that little piece of information that could actually help in rescuing someone from modern slavery.